Karen was with us several weeks ago when we were talking about the ag gag laws that are popping up all over the country. And that is, you explain what an ag gag law is, Karen. I'll let you do that.
Well, for the folks listening out there, an ag gag law is basically a whistleblower type of law where corporate industry has backed legislation that is prohibiting folks from disguising themselves as farm workers and applying as a farm worker and taking hidden video of different practices inside of industrial farms. And it also paints a wide brush and includes folks who either possess photos of this or possess photos of the operation, which could cause intent or harm economically to an operation. So, it's basically a whistleblower law.
It's an anti-whistleblower law.
Yeah, anti-whistleblower law.
So that's what we're talking about. So that was what we started with, and you called it to my attention. I saw an article on it, and then I talked to you, and we talked about that. Now we've got something new going on in the state of Michigan, and it will affect people throughout the country, perhaps. It's certainly going to affect people who like to eat meat but wanted to make sure that it was raised in a humane condition.
Yes.
And it's going to affect top-end chefs in restaurants who look for that kind of meat to satisfy their customers. It started today. It's weird that it's April Fool's Day, and you would think that it almost sounds like a joke. It almost sounds like a joke, but it's deadly serious, isn't it?
Yes, it's very serious. What they're proposing is that heritage swine breeds be banned from production. Heritage swine are raised outdoors in enclosed areas, and this is one of the niche markets that people are just clamoring for because the meat's tasty, there's little or no use of antibiotics, and it's just a great niche market for many small to medium farmers all over the country.
Well, let's bring in Mark Baker from Baker's Green Acres in Marion, Michigan. Mark, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. I know it's probably a pretty crazy day for you. Before I get to explaining what's happened and how you're affected by it, I'm wondering, have you been on the lookout for people coming to your farm today? It is April 1st. Is there going to be any enforcement on a Sunday?
Well, they said they would, and we took measures to keep things safe around here. Like, I sent my kids off to be with their grandparents and my wife off. So I held her down last night by myself, and nothing happened. It was quiet.
Well, this is serious stuff. This is this is a little scary if you have to send your kids off because you're afraid that. And we're talking about the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, which gave an order that said the swine that you have on your property are illegal to raise at this point.
That's correct.
And that's because they're worried about feral populations in Michigan, and they want to control them. Tell me where the logic breaks down in this.
Well, the logic breaks down in just the use of the English language. They're calling pigs that are domesticated pigs, and they're mine. They're on my side of the fence. They are calling them feral. You know, and a feral pig is a pig that was domesticated and then was either abandoned or escaped and wound up on the outside of the fence and then rewilded itself. If those pigs were brought back into captivity, into domestication, they would be domestic pigs again. But our pigs are certainly not feral because they're under our direct supervision and animal husbandry practices.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where it breaks down.
Well, and I happened to see the video of you testifying before the Senate committee in the state of Michigan. And you make a point that pigs in your situation are not likely to wander off because they want to hang around their food source.
Yeah, pigs are they're lazy. They don't want to have to work hard for their food if they can just whine at the fence and I'll feed them. So if they ever do get out, like if one of the kids leaves a gate open or something like that, the pigs are more likely to come to the house or the barn and start looking for food, or the garden, my wife's garden. But to think that a pig would head to the woods is, it sounds good to non-farmers, and it sounds believable, but to a farmer, it's not likely to happen.
So how, if there are feral pigs out there, how did they get out? So I assume that there are farmers who have let them go, and some will escape.
Yeah.
How serious is a problem is the feral pig population in Michigan?
Well, it's non-existent. It's a fabrication is what it is. They made up this terrible problem, and then the answer to that problem is really what they want. What they want is all pigs to be in confinement houses or CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations. That's their end goal, and they want to put family farms just right out of business. I can tell you that there is no feral pig problem. And what the Michigan legislature did is they said, I'm sorry, someone else is calling. Yeah,
oh, that, I heard the click. Cool. Right. They're calling to tell you you're on the radio.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But what the DNR went to the legislature and they said, we have this terrible problem and we want to shut it off before it becomes huge like it is in, say, Texas. And the legislature said, okay, and, you know, they're smart people. They call around and they find out what other states do. And states like Missouri started to have a problem, and they issued a shoot-on-site order. And so anybody that's in the woods that's hunting, and they're hunting legally, and they own guns legally, or they have a concealed carry permit, can legally harvest an animal, and they can bring it to their house, and they can make pork chops out of it. So the DNR has said that there's 5,000 to 8,000 pigs running wild in the state of Michigan, you know, scaring old women and, you know, eating children and all this stuff. Well, last year, the first year of the shoot on site, there was only 42 animals shot.
And as you pointed out in your testimony, how many deer were killed at the same time?
About 145,000.
And 42 pigs.
Yeah, 42 pigs.
Okay, yeah, that's a terrible problem. That's just a terrible problem.
There's further disturbing testimony there. Pigs that are brought to, say, facilities where you're going to use them for hunting, because that's where their focus is. That's where they fired their first arrow, because nobody's sympathetic towards hunting preserves, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they focused on them, and they said, well, that's where the pigs are coming from. They're getting out there. Well, before you can send pigs to one of those hunting preserves, they have to be checked by a vet for pseudorabies and general health, and the vet puts a tag in their ear. It's a steel tag, and it's designed for swine, so it won't come out. And we do it all the time, and very rarely do we have one come out. If we do, a lot of ear is coming out with a two. And the tag has a number on it, and the number coincides with the number of the farm, and that goes on record with the Michigan Department of Agriculture. So here the DNR says 42 pigs were killed. Where are the ear tags? I want to see them. And if those pigs did damage, well, we have nuisance laws. If my pigs get out and do damage to somebody's property and somebody shoots that pig and they pull the tag and the tag says that belongs to Mark Baker, I'm the one that's responsible for the damage.
Mm-hmm.
So why is the DNR taking the responsibility to clear every pig out of the state so that no damage gets done? That's the responsibility of the farmer. We've done it that way for a lot of years now, and now they want to take control is what they want to do. They want to have control of family farms.
Okay, so that's where it sort of goes off the rails. You can understand why if there's a feral pig problem in the state and they need to cull those pigs, as you say, do a shoot on site. But they've taken it one step further, which is to say, and now you as a farmer, cannot even have those pigs. You cannot even raise those pigs in your farm because they're so likely to get out. But as you've pointed out, they don't get out.
Right.
So it's some kind of subterfuge here. I guess, Karen, I'll bring you in. I'm sure you see the connection here. One of the things that I wrote about, I was reading some of the articles about it. It says from a woman named Hartke, who runs who does a blog, I'm trying to find her name here.
Kimberly.
Thank you very much. She writes, the pork confinement operations in Michigan have come out in favor of this new law, meaning the CAFOs have come out in favor of it. As the public becomes increasingly aware of the eco-damage, filth, and animal cruelty on these mega farms, rather than clean up their act, they are pressuring government agencies to thwart alternative production models. So sensitive to the growing public concern about their practices, in some states, pork producers are introducing ag gag legislation to keep the public from seeing how their food is produced. Or they're just going to put the people who do it humanely out of business. Now, that's my own comment at the end of that. So is this where it all comes together, Karen?
Yes, I do. Ag gag laws are bringing up a host of problems, one of which is disease. If we are unable to take documentation of practices on these large-scale factory farms, we have a big problem with antibiotic resistance. That's when bacteria evolve to become resistant to normal antibiotics. And this is a huge growing problem, in part due to hospitals, sewage treatment plants, but most recently it's been proven that large-scale CAFOs, who use millions of pounds of this a year, in fact, about 70% of all the antibiotics used in the U.S. go to animal agriculture in the absence of disease.
And if I may jump in here, the Obama administration is addressing that finally. After some 35 years, the Food and Drug Administration may ban the agricultural use of some popular antibiotics because of this problem.
Yeah, they went one step. They banned the cephalosporins, which is used in about 14% of humans, but there is still a host of other antibiotics that need to be banned, and a recent federal court judge brought down an order that this needs to be seriously looked at and implemented. It was something that was addressed several years ago, but FDA backed out on it. So we need to make sure and know that factory farms are transmitting disease off-site. I heard that feral hogs are in danger of harming people with their pathogens and their diseases. We need to look at how many factory farms are polluting billions of gallons of water in states across the country, and this pollution is found in air, in antibiotic-resistant staff, in homes downwind from these confinements. I think this is much more threat to human health than feral hogs.
We're talking to Karen Hudson, Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water. Mark Baker is also on the line with us. He's with Baker's Green Acres in Marion, Michigan. Here's where it all comes together. It's ag gag laws, and now in Michigan, this onerous law, which, and Mark, is it actually something that was passed by the legislature, or is it just an order enacted by the Michigan DNR?
It's the latter. The legislature really didn't have anything to do with this. This was solely on the part of the DNR. So they issued a declaratory ruling on the 13th of December 2011, and now they're going to start enforcing it.
And this is what scares the heck out of me. This is a DNR order, and the night before it goes into, they say, okay, April 1st, we're going to come and get your pigs. You don't really know whether they're going to show up with guns or handcuffs for you. And you had to send your family away. This doesn't sound like America to me.
No.
This doesn't sound like America at all.
No.
Now, you know, I'm from Michigan.
Yeah.
I love my home state, but Michigan's gone off the rails. I don't know what's going on over there. But that being said, as Karen and I discussed a few weeks ago, the ag gag law came up here in Illinois, you know, with a bunch of Democrats running everything. So it's really not about Democrat or Republican. It's about big ag and big money.
That's right.
And you are, what do you propose to do now?
Well, what I told them that, or what I'm doing, we sued the DNR here in my county. And then there's another farmer in the UP that also sued. And, you know, that's what we can do. I told the DNR that I would not comply with this order because I cited violations of the 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendment. And I'm an oath keeper. I'm former military, so I took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against any enemies, foreign or domestic. And I told them I will not comply with this order because it's illegal and it's unconstitutional. So that puts the ball in their court. They can arrest me. They can try and prosecute me. But we feel we have a lawyer, and we feel that in the process of prosecuting me, they will actually be found guilty of issuing an unconstitutional order.
And this is amazing because, as you said, you're a vet.
Yeah.
You serve this country. And I've heard your story, Mark, which is you came back to start a farm because you saw what the farm people were like in the military, and they were the salt of the earth.
Yeah.
These were the people that you thought were a cut above. And so you come back to Michigan, and you had the opportunity to be involved in a CAFO, I understand. Why didn't that happen?
Well, that's kind of ironic that happened. When I came, I started looking at that. There's all the buzz around is it's a real good deal. You get into it, you build these really big hog houses, and then once they're paid for, you start making pretty good money. The problem is as soon as you get them paid for, they want you to do upgrades on them. And those are precisely the people that are involved in this. It's Michigan pork producers. Things didn't go very well between me and them, and I just saw a big mess. One of the things was they were supposed to come to my farm and meet me, and they on a Saturday, so we had the place cleaned up, kids looking good, and they never showed up and didn't call me. And so I was just out of the military, and that was a big problem for me at that time. And so I broke communication with them, and since then, anytime that they're involved with something, it's kind of a mess. When I was testifying, they lined the back of the court there and sat there with pretty smug looks on their face. And I don't know what they were there for, I think to intimidate me.
Yeah, but, during your testimony to the Michigan Senate?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the other story, stranger and stranger as you dig into this. That's the thing. I found out about this, basically yesterday. As I read more and more, I become more and more appalled because from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, the farmers weren't even the first people to find out about this, that they went to, oddly enough, the restaurants
right first.
The Michigan DNR went to the restaurants and said, hey, you might be losing your hogs here that are raised humanely. And then they went to you. The farmers, and then there was a meeting where you had armed DNR people sort of watching over you. Is this the Soviet Union or what? Can you describe that for me, please?
Oh, sure. They called a meeting because there were so many of us farmers calling up there and asking them to explain this declaratory ruling. There's language in here that we just don't really understand. They say that pigs that are raised for Sus domestica, they throw a little Latin in there to make the mix even more clear, is okay. So we try to find out what does sus domestica mean. I would think that would probably be me. But anyway, they called this meeting, and we thought, hey, we can go to that. We can ask some questions, get this hammered out. Maybe they don't understand, you know, what farming is all about, which is possible. DNR, they're supposed to be in the woods, right? So we go to this meeting, and I walk in, and there's an armed officer standing in the middle of the hallway. So I had to either walk in front of him or behind him. It was kind of a tactic, I thought. And he had his you know, his thumbs tucked into his belt in front and just kind of stared us down.
Kind of Barney Fife, right?
What's that?
Kind of Barney Fife-like.
This guy was pretty sharp looking. I mean, I got nothing against the COs. I mean, they're kind of like military. They joined up, and they're doing what they're told. They have to do what they're told. They take orders.
All right.
But I got nothing against the COs, really. And then when we went in the room, there was another one sitting down amongst the men. And then there was a guy in plain clothes that had an automatic on his hip, and he was wearing a vest. I saw that right away. Anyway, they sat us down, and there was about 40 guys. They gave us a PowerPoint presentation, which was basically the declaratory ruling, which we all had. We'd all downloaded that off the Internet. And then a gal got up and gave a briefing about biology. A lot of it didn't even pertain to what we were there for. And then she says, "That's it, fellas. You know, have some coffee and donuts in the back of the room and drive safely on the way home." And some of the men raised their hands, had questions. And she says, "Oh, I'm sorry. We don't have time for your questions." And some of the men got kind of upset and stood up and started to ask questions anyway. And then the armed officer that was sitting behind me stood up with his hand up on his hip, just above his pistol, and said, "Gentlemen, we're going to keep this orderly, and please take your seats." And he had a pistol on one side. He had a taser on the other side. So
we
took our seats and shut up. And then they said that we could have coffee and donuts in the back of the room. So a lot of the men got together in small groups and talked amongst themselves. And it was a galvanizing time. And that's when we decided that we're not going to take this from these guys. Because if we take this, the next step is going to be even worse. So we have to resist this with everything we possibly have. So that's why I've just refused to carry out this order. I will not do it. And I'll resist them with every asset that I have.
Well, good on you. I'm you know, you got to at some point draw the line, stand up. It's amazing, you know, and where have we seen this picture before? I've talked on this show in the past about what happened in Illinois, and you're probably not aware of this issue, Mark, but there's going to be a open pit sand mine dug right next to Starved Rock State Park. And same thing happened. The county board gets together, and they're not going to let people talk. You know, it's to kind of shut down the debate, even though people were pretty outraged about it. And then they don't even allow the DNR to have hearings on it. And that's the Illinois DNR. And so my feeling is, what's with the DNRs in the Midwest lately? And I'm hoping the Illinois DNR steps up and slows down that whole process. I don't think it's going to happen. I think that they're going to be digging by the end of the year next to Starved Rock, really. I think that's what's going to happen. But there are people working on it. But here in Michigan, that's chilling, what you're telling me. And this article that's written by Kimberly Hartke, which you can connect to if you go to your website, which is Baker's. Sorry, I don't have it right in front of me.
It's BakersGreenAcres.com.
BakersGreenAcres.com. Thank you. Because she writes that you should contact Governor Rick Snyder. And for you people who can hear the show in Michigan, I hope you do. You people out of state, because it's affecting restaurants in Illinois and Indiana, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. It doesn't matter what state you're in. You can still call him. And
do you supply any restaurants in Chicago?
I do.
Which restaurants here in Chicago?
The Brown Trout.
The Brown Trout.
Yeah.
So if you're a fan of the Brown Trout and you want to continue to be able to have pork that is humanely raised, contact Governor Rick Snyder. It's rick.snyder@michigan.gov. rick.snyder@michigan.gov or phone, and I would say phone.
Yeah.
Pick up the phone and make his staff answer questions. 517-335-7858. 517-335-7858. 7858, and Kimberly writes very astutely. She says, do not allow his office to direct you to the DNR, because that's what they're going to try to do. Oh, that's a DNR thing.
Yeah,
it's a DNR thing. But shouldn't people also be contacting the legislature? Is the legislature going to be able to do it? What did the committee say after you testified?
Well, they generated two pieces of paper that they wanted to vote on, because the testimony was pretty compelling. The senators didn't know. And I think a lot of the legislature is really compassionate and decent people, the ones that I met. And that was good. But what I saw happen was they went in to vote on these two pieces of paper. One was to squash the declaratory ruling. The other one was just to give us 90 days extension, just so, you know, we could get this hammered out. And we had enough votes for the 90-day extension. And then a group came in, a group of men came in into the lobby. I guess they're lobbyists. They look like contractors to me. And, you know, a bunch of suits. And they peeled those senators out of there one at a time and got them to change their votes. I saw this with my own eyes. And that lobbying group is employed by the Michigan Pork Growers Association. And they really, they're employed by all the big ag, like Michigan Milk and Allied Poultry Industries and Michigan Agribusiness Association. So it's big ag that wants to do away with family farms. That's really what it comes down to. And those guys came in and changed it. Our legislators would have done the right thing, but they were convinced. And who knows? I mean, I didn't see them passing money, but they were influenced by these guys.
This is just the saddest story. And it is. And folks, Mark Baker is not a lobbyist. He's not even with a environmental organization. He's a farmer. He's a farmer just trying to make money and raise his family in central Michigan. And this is what's going on over there. Unbelievable.
You know, Mike, I gotta say something, too. This really isn't just about me. I mean, it's really not. This affects 2,009 farms in Michigan that raise less than 500 animals. And so most of those guys are out on fields, or out in the dirt, they call it. And a lot of these farms, I would say most of them, don't even know that this is happening. They're just going to get visited someday by the DNR and told that they have to depopulate their herd. And they're really going to be taken by surprise. And in my case, this hurts me a lot financially. I mean, it could put us out of business. But I know a lot of guys are heavily invested in hogs, and it will put them out of business. So here we have this terrible economy. The governor's going around saying local economies, local food, farms, innovative techniques. But then he's got his minions at the DNR that are squashing small farms. And you got to ask why. But I really think that the governor should be answering a few questions at this point. But he will not come out and talk with us. He will not return phone calls. He could stop this right now. But, you know, you gotta wonder, why doesn't he? You know, it's not going to hurt anything to just stop this and let us continue to raise hogs out on the fields. There are guys that have depopulated their herds. I know some of them. They were with us at first, but they're so intimidated by the DNR that they're afraid. They're basically afraid. I mean, I'm kind of afraid, too. That's why I sent my wife and children away last night, and I stayed here myself, because I know their tactics. I know what they like to do. They're famous for pre-dawn raids on farms. So, this has got to stop. People have to rise up now and let their voices be heard. These people need to have their teeth pulled, and that needs to happen soon.
I am speechless here, Mark. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get the word out. I'm going to make a dedicated podcast of our conversation and make sure that folks know about this issue. And I want you to keep in touch with me. Let me know the first time anybody shows up and attempts to take out your herd. We will follow through. It's a shame I'm not broadcasting in Michigan. The signal does reach over there, but it doesn't cover a lot of the state.
Yeah.
But people can listen on the internet, and I have people, and like you said, it affects restaurants all over the place, and it's just the tip of the iceberg because this happens. It's a slippery slope to having happen in many states.
Yeah.
I have to go, Mark. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Karen, you didn't get a chance to talk a lot, but
That's fine. Mark has all the facts, and he's 100% right, and we back him.
And I appreciate you alerting me to this story. This is an important story, and we have to continue to follow it.
That's right.
All right. Both of you, thank you so much, and this is no April Fool's joke. I'm telling you, this is not a gimmick. This is real. This is happening. People with the, armed guards at meetings and people coming in the dead of night and taking away your business. And it's happening in America. Thanks again, Mark Baker and Karen Hudson. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.